Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sundown on Lake Washita, and I was 10 years old, watching a daddy teach his boy how to cast a fishing pole. And I remember wishing that I had what he had, one chance to go fishing with my dad.
Hey everybody, it's Jim Asker. I'm the country Christian gospel chart manager at Billboard on the Chart Beat podcast with the one and only Bobby Bones of the Bobby Bones Show. Hi, Bobby.
Thank you very much. The one and only. Thankfully, there are no more than just one.
Bobby, who just got off the air this morning, they'll be hearing this later on, but I wanted to ask you first off, did you watch the debate last night?
I did, and that's why, one of the reasons I'm extremely sleepy today, because not only did I watch the debate, and I watched all of it, but then I wanted to watch and see what everyone's opinions were on all the channels, because you can't just watch one channel.
Right.
Because if you go to Fox, they lean a certain way, so you catch theirs.
To the right.
Then you go to MSNBC.
And to the left.
To the left. Then you go to CNN, and they just kind of bounce around.
Right.
And it's a little left, but you get, so I kind of want to see a lot of the coverage.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
I was up till about 11. Uh-huh. I like to hear people's opinions from all the different sides. So I watched the debate, found it to be very entertaining, saw that it was up over the second debate, which I thought was interesting.
Because that was down from the first debate. The ratings, you mean?
Yeah. So the first debate was up. I mean, it was a huge ratings.
Huge.
Because it was the first time.
Biggest ever.
But the second one, you know, was big because of it came right after the bus thing with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So I was surprised this debate actually was larger than the second one. But the ratings were even better for this one. And I thought it was a good debate until the end. It got a little out of control again.
We try and do these, the Chartbeat podcast, for the normal Billboard listener, reader, viewer, who, you know, isn't inside the bubble. So,
oh, you do not want to be inside the bubble. I don't like being inside the bubble. And
Bobby is outside the bubble, but you are inside the bubble here in Nashville, which is one thing I want to ask you about a little while. But I do want to say that, you know, we were talking about the debate, and I've been seeing you. I listen and I watch and see what's going on with you, and I just keep expecting to see you pop up as one of the pundits on CNN after one of the, because you're all over the place,
you know,
and you got so much going on.
The funniest thing was, I tell you, one of the more eye-opening moments of the last of this whole political cycle was the day that Trump announced his candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
He had the speech, and it was the one where he referred to the people crossing over as whatever, all those terms. And I got on the air and I said, guys, this Trump thing is for real, just because he's speaking in human terms. And they on CNN later that day, they referred to what I was saying. And I was like, whoa, that's the of every weird thing that's ever happened to me. The fact they're in a political forum and they referenced something I said on the radio, that was crazy. So I try to stay out of politics.
That's
awesome. I'm an independent. Like, I just sit back and I commentate on.
You do a great job staying in the middle. And I was trying to get a feel for which way you lean, and I couldn't tell. So I think you do a great job at that.
On picking on the absurd parts of
kind
both of them.
Just making fun of the whole
and
circus.
And making fun of what's absurd, yeah.
Bobby Bones Show, the syndicated Bobby Bones Show, is on about 100 radio stations, right?
It is.
And you started here in 2013. And congratulations, because
thank you.
Just as somebody who moved to Nashville from another place and as an ex-radio person, you know, you took a legend's place here, kind of. I mean, Jerry House was already done pretty much. I think Billy Greenwood was doing the show when you came. WSIX is the flagship station, I should say that, in Nashville. And, you know, people were expecting you to have a rough time, and you just survived that beginning really well, I thought. And was there any backlash that you felt, or did you just try and ignore that?
I think survival is the perfect word for my first 18 months. Like, I just survived because, again, I had to replace arguably the greatest country DJ of all time in Jerry House. And so people didn't know about Billy.
And he was Nashville.
And he was. And he was in the community. The artists knew him. And I came in, and I wasn't just replacing Jerry. It was the first syndicated national country morning show. So I was replacing other cities' Jerry Houses.
Right, because each town had their own set of Jerry Houses.
So here I am, this goofball, and the show sounds different than what they're used to. And so, yeah, it was really, really, really rough for about 18 months. And then the incline slowly happened.
Did you just try and not pay attention to the chatter, the noise that was going on in the industry while you were getting ramped up, and just keep your eye on the ball?
I would love to say that I was completely staying away from it, but you can't, because we all like to look into, we all want to be liked, and we like to see what people are saying about us. I did the best job I could at keeping myself away from as much negativity as possible. That being said, I still checked, and it just wasn't a good time, but I knew that when you replace a legend, that's what happens. Like, I knew that going into it.
Right.
So at least I had it's like if I write a joke and I'm working on it for a long time, it starts to not be funny after a while. I have to remember, this is a funny joke. Like, even though I've been working on it, I've been writing a sketch. Like, this is the reason I've started it, because it's funny. Even though I don't find it funny anymore, I kind of have to go back to why I started it. So as it was rough, I would think back, okay, you knew it was going to be hard. So you have to survive this first really tumultuous year and a half.
What city did you move from, Bobby?
Austin, Texas.
Okay. And what station were you on? Can you tell us what station you were on?
So I was on, the flagship was KHFI in Austin. Mm-hmm. And so.
Was that iHeart?
It was.
Okay.
It was Clear Channel that before had turned iHeart.
Yeah. Right.
And I had built my own syndication company there. And we weren't playing any music, but we were mostly on top 40 stations. We're on other formats.
So that was the genre, top 40 before country.
But at the same time, I was doing a national sports show on Fox Sports Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing an alternative show. And I also did an alternative rock show in Nashville, too.
So you had a lot going on back then.
I just love music.
And did you like country before you came to Nashville?
I applied at a country station first.
Uh-huh.
Like, I went to US 97 in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Okay.
As a kid. Because
you grew up in Arkansas.
I did.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you, so I might as well ask you now. Did you listen to any, what kind of music did you listen to as a kid?
For me, I grew up on, a lot of stuff, but like, Garth Brooks to me is the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we call him the GOAT. Like, he comes in, that's my favorite thing I've ever done on this show, is have Garth come in and play. It's crazy. But my grandma, who raised me for a long time and adopted me for a while when I was a kid, she played records all the time. And so growing up young, it was always Andy Griffith gospel albums.
Okay.
Which a lot of people don't even know that he was a singer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a lot of the Ray Charles. And from Arkansas, anyone from Arkansas, you really take pride in. So it was a lot of Johnny Cash, like a lot. And so.
So you had a good sense of the heritage growing up.
Way more the heritage than the current for a long time.
Wow.
So that's kind of where it started for me. And then, you know, it went into, I would listen to the radio, and it was Garth and Tim McGraw were really probably the two biggest artists for me as a kid in country.
So what was the light bulb moment for radio? Was that something you were attracted to as a kid? Because you grew up, you're 34, right?
I'm 36. I'm older.
36,
yeah,
okay.
I'm getting long in the tooth here.
You're an old man.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. But what kind of radio did you grow up on? And what was the light bulb moment when you said, I have to do this?
My fifth birthday, my aunt bought me a radio. And the guy was like, hey, happy birthday to Bobby Estill, which is my real name. And I was like, wow, I wanted to do that. I've always known what I wanted to do. So, and I would listen to Kissin 96, US 97, and KLAZ, the pop station. Those are my three stations.
KSSN, the country station.
Bob Robbins, who I listened to growing up forever. And so, you know, I not only did I love country, but I mean, listen, I loved the 90s alternative scene. Like in the 2000s, I was way into hip hop. I just love music.
So you are like, you know, when I grew up, I'm older than you. So when I grew up, my taste in music was like this, really small. We tended to grow up in a genre, basically rock and roll, and that's all we liked. And you know, I do a little teaching now, so I work with kids 19 to 23, and I know they listen to everything from classical to hip hop and everything in between. And it sounds like you grew up with an open mind for everything too.
Well, it's because we have access to it, you know, and I think the more access everyone has, like the kids now have even more access than I did. Like for me, Napster was the game changer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you listen to the radio and you have your few stations, but once digital music started to come along, you could have anything, everything. You'd be exposed to different, your friends would tell you about things and you had it at your fingertips. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't have that. You had to wait on the radio with record, play, pause,
right,
and then hit unpause to tape, to get it on the tape and then to right, keep it and to give it to a friend. So now you can just say, hey, check this out. Type it in. You have access to it. So because of all of the influences that you can have readily, people are influenced by everything. And you see that in the music now, in country, in the alternative scene. You know.
And I think it's awesome. And what was the first, your first radio gig was like you're 17, right?
Yeah, I worked at KLAZ. So it was the second station I applied to, and they hired me to clean the front, which is the like the lobby, and to switch out a countdown CD.
Oh, that's classic.
It was a Rick D's Weekly Top 40. And before my first weekend, some people got fired for stealing station equipment. And I was 17, and they were like, you have to go on the air. We have to give you a name. And I was, okay.
So many great people get their start like that, just by accident. It happens.
You know, right place, right time, but going and forcing my way in to get that interview, and then working hard to keep it.
Wow, that's awesome.
I was terrible. I was terrible for years, though.
But somebody saw something in you, though. Somebody saw
something.
Yeah,
they saw that show up on time.
Uh-huh. You have to show up on time.
That's the most important thing.
I think that, too. I mean,
that's 90% of it, being on time and working hard.
So fast forward, so when you came to Nashville, you came from outside the format, but you were already adjusted and liked country music, and you were ready. You wanted to do it.
I had the option to do what I wanted to do.
Okay.
So I could have expanded my Top 40 show. Mm-hmm. I could have moved over to the alternative format full time and moved to Los Angeles, or I could have moved to Nashville. I mean, I had options to what I wanted to do, but for me, it was just such an easy decision to make. Like it was, hey, this is happening. Which one do you want to do?
Cool.
And so it was, well, obviously I want to go to Nashville, but even they prefaced it with, it's going to be really rough, but I just knew that this was where my personality, where my kind of moral compass, where it fit the best.
Your crew of people that you have on the air with you, your group, were they with you when you started?
My entire crew, all of them. None of them worked on the radio.
And let's write them down really quick for everybody who's not familiar.
Amy's my co-host, my main. She sold granite at a rock store, and I met her.
From Arkansas?
From Austin.
Okay.
So I met her, and she was a granite salesperson, and then we were friends forever, and I was like, hey, you should come in. Ended up hiring her as my co-host, a friend. Met Lunchbox at a bar. Eddie was my old TV producer. That's our digital our video producer now. Ray, all the people that work in my producer room are old interns.
Wow.
So Ray is my main audio. Morgan is our executive producer. And Mike, our phone screener / writer producer, is an old intern. So it's either interns or friends.
It's a great crew. And I must say, it sounds like you're hanging out with a group of friends. Listen, you're eavesdropping on this great conversation that's going on. And it just sounds like you're having a great time. Whether I know that having been on radio, you come in different. Everybody comes in with different moods every day, but you hit the mic and you're on. Everybody's a pro, right? You have to be a pro.
I think with our show, some days or segments are really awful because we don't know how to do radio that well. We just know how to be people, especially them. Like I've been doing radio.
Isn't that the charm of it, though?
But it's also, it's the double-edged sword. Like there's some great times because there's not a lot of radioism in it, but there are some really awful segments too. So you take the good with the bad.
Amy was selling granite.
Mm-hmm.
So did you teach her were you her mentor and brought her in? And
I think I mentored her in just, okay, there's a mic in front of you, but just stay yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the only mentoring I did for her. Is just stay yourself and don't let that microphone affect anything you're going to say and be yourself all the time.
What do you think about on your way to work? What do you listen to? What do you think about? Do you shut everything off and try and get in a certain zone?
It's so early in the morning.
What time?
I wake up anywhere from 2:30 to 3, okay, depending on how much I have to do. I put on my, I just have to loosen my voice up a lot of it too. So because I'll do hours of liners and spots before a show. So a lot of times when I'm driving to work, I'll do Bumblebee, Bumblebee, Bumblebee. So I'm really just trying, because I know as soon as I walk in, it's time to start.
Right.
So I'm doing that. And, you know, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. I'm doing those things and just singing with the radio. So what I'm thinking about really is I just got to get my voice to a place, because as soon as I sit down, there's no time to go to the bathroom until after the show's over. I have stacks and stacks of liners and commercials. And I'll do them for hours before I go on the air. So that's really, there's nothing super cerebral happening. I wish there was a cool story.
Do you, no, that's a good story. Do you guys talk to each other before you go on? You just hit the mic and hit the ground running.
Nobody on the show has any idea what the show is going to be like except for me. I do the entire show.
You're the only one with a set list.
That's it. I don't want them to have a set list for the same reason I
it's
hired them.
It's like a Springsteen
them.
Show. You're calling audibles.
Well, for them, it's not audible. It's a normal day.
Right.
Because there's not a normal.
So they have to be really in tune. You guys are pretty in tune with each other, though, right?
Yes. You have to be to do this show because, again, you don't know what's coming. I do, but I want their real life. They're real people. I'm not a real person. I'm like some sort of weird Amazon guy that doesn't have a real life.
How do you make sure everybody's involved?
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't. It's who's providing, who has the most interesting story, part of their life.
It's a relationship, so jealousy must happen
all the time.
From time to time?
All the time.
How do you handle that? So-and-so's mad at Amy's mad at Lunchbox or whatever.
When it gets to a boiling point, you sit down and have a talk. If not, you just roll through it, just like you do in normal life.
Do you go through periods where you're on a streak, like a hitting streak, and then get into slumps? You feel like you're in a slump sometimes? Like, we got to get out of this, people.
There are weeks of shows. There are certain shows that are fantastic. There are months where I'm like, man, we've been crushing it. And there are days and weeks and where I'm just like, man, we are not in a good place. And it all falls on me regardless. It all falls on me.
The buck stops here.
Yeah. I'm the leader. Win or lose, you know, it's me. When we all win together. Lose, it's my fault.
Do you pay attention to ratings?
Yeah. It's hard when you have 100 stations.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll have 70 up, 30 down. 75 up, 25 down. So, and all I do is focus on the down. Right. I don't enjoy winning. There's no enjoyment for me in my life, in any part of my life, in winning. I hate losing.
See, this has been the case for, I was a program director for a long time. Disc jockeys, you could tell them 100 things. 99 will be good. 1 will be bad. They will focus on that 1 bad thing, you said.
It's the insecurity of all of us. I think the creative type is the type that's really insecure with themselves. And I mean, I'm, if not more, as insecure as anyone.
How many stations did you guys start with?
Probably around 30.
And you built it to 100 in a short period of time.
3 years feels like 20 years.
And the countdown show. When did the countdown show start?
As soon as I got here.
That's really?
That's 120 stations or so. That was part of it when I came over.
Is that your first countdown show that you've done, or have you done others?
That was mine.
Do you enjoy it?
No, I don't enjoy it. It's fine. I mean, it's a countdown show. I mean, I get on and it's a music based show, so it's fine. I get to play the biggest. I mean, for me, I like to tell stories and connect with listeners. The countdown show is just a different mechanism. It's just giving the hits to the listeners. Mm-hmm. They love it,
right?
And so, I don't not like it, but it's fine.
It's kind of a synopsis of the week, and
yeah, it's like when I go home and watch the news. Is it Walking Dead to me? No. But do I think I need it? Yeah.
Did you listen to Casey Kasem when you were a kid?
I did. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Who didn't? Of course. You know, it was Casey Kasem and Crook and Chase and Rick Dees. You know, those were the countdowns when I was growing up.
Nobody talked up a record like Rick Dees.
Rick Dees, he had Disco Duck.
Yeah.
I mean, he had songs. Rick Dees was an inspiration to me, and he was doing that before I was even born. So Rick Dees was crazy because it was like, you can do these other things outside of just being on the radio. But he was, you know, a very standard DJ kind of guy. But, you know, my eyes really opened when I would hear like Howard Stern talk like a normal human, not even his content, but how he would talk. That, to me, was just like, what in the world is happening on the radio right now? Like, he's talking like a human being.
It's like a normal.
Because I did not have a good voice, and I was never going to make it as a DJ. Like, I couldn't do it. I'd be out.
You think you don't have a good voice. We all think we don't have good voices, but you have a very distinctive voice that is friendly and cuts through. See, I'm your program director.
That, you
this
know,
morning.
That's basically what I get from all the girls, too. You know, you're very friendly.
Well, you are, though.
You're cute.
And you're funny.
Know? You're not hot, and you're not, but you're cute, you know. But I think I tried to have the deep voice for a long time. I faked it. Continuous hit music, 105.9 KLAZ.
Well, you must have had a program director tell you had to have a deep voice in the beginning, yes. Right? Because we all had those.
Yeah, for sure. They told me to do everything the way it was supposed to be done, and I couldn't do it.
Your first interview was Darius Rucker?
Ever. It was awful, except he was awesome.
Were your hands shaking?
It wasn't. My whole body was probably shaking.
Uh-huh.
Darius was... All of Hootie and the Blowfish was there, and I was a huge fan, and you randomly were going to get one of the four guys. And I knew them all, but, you know, you root for the lead singer. And they're like, you're going to get... I was 17. You're like, you're going to get Darius.
How did that happen? 17 years old, you're interviewing Darius Rucker.
Because the interview was like an hour away, and I was the only one that would drive the hour to do the interview with with Hootie and the Blowfish. At the time, they weren't huge.
Playing like a state fair or something?
They were playing an amusement park.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so I went over, and it was Darius. And I shook, and he like basically held my hand and led me through the interview. And I was like, we still talk about it.
He was very kind then, huh?
He's awesome. He doesn't remember it, and uh-huh. I do. But it's he's still one of the nicest guys.
And you've had him on since, right?
Oh, 15, 20 times. Like, he's a guy, too, he's in that rare group of artists that I let into my personal life because I try to keep myself disconnected.
So you are in Nashville, and I said before I made a reference to the bubble, but there must be all kinds of claws over you to get artists in the studio. And I wanted to talk to you for a minute about, you champion a lot of music, and I really appreciate that. But there must be a lot of pressure for you to do that. From everyone, the record labels.
I don't feel the pressure because I don't. I shut everything out. Like uh-huh. It's just a rule. I don't take music from anybody.
Cool fact: a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I wish I had a rich uncle that'd kick the bucket, and I was sitting on a pile like Warren Buffett. I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat. It can buy me a truck to pull it.
How do you pick something you want to champion, like the Chris Jansen that you did?
Let's see. So Chris did not have a record deal, and Chris had done some charity events. And so Chris sent me the song on email, and I have a few friends that send me songs on emails. And I just heard it and was like, holy cow. And I wasn't, the story is I wasn't even going to play it the next day. I didn't hear this thing and go, well, this is amazing. It's about to be a number one song and get him a record deal. Like, I'm not that smart.
Mm-hmm.
I told Ray, put it up on the wall, which is the place you push buttons and a song will play. So, like, put it up on the music page. And if I have any extra time, I may reference it. I wish I was smarter than that. It could be like I knew it was a hit.
Because he got the label deal after that.
Yeah, and so I played it. And as I was like, man, this song is so good. So I played it again. And then we started to see it go up iTunes. Because I don't know the algorithm, but you can check it every 20 minutes or so, mm-hmm. and you'll see where the chart. And it climbed and climbed. And we were like, holy cow. So I played it like 5 times that morning. And, you know, it ended up going to number one. Or
number two on our Hot Country Songs chart.
Whatever the case. He got a record deal about it out of it, you know. And it was a top five pops on iTunes. It was like a top five pop song for that brief, you know, 3 or 4 days. It was crazy.
Well, it must feel good though when somebody gets a record deal after you.
I have the weird thing is record labels will say, "Hey, what do you?" And I'm like, "I got nothing to say. I have no investment." And it's happened with a few artists that have got record deals because of it. I have nothing to do with it.
Who are some of your, just having on the show and embracing them, who are some of the favorite artists that you've had on? And I know you've had a lot, so it must be hard
capacity?
To pick.
Just generally?
Just, yeah, I relate to this person. They were a great interview. Sometimes in my own job, I will have a certain thing in my head that I'm thinking about somebody. Then you interview them, and I think, they're a really nice guy. She's a really great person. And I really enjoy the interview. You can see how much soul they have involved in their and how much they have invested in their career and the whole package.
You know, it's a format where there are a lot of nice people. But like Dierks Bentley to me is just a good dude. And he's a grinder. Like Dierks has been grinding for a long time. And he's just now hitting that A spot. You know, and there are tears. And now he's hitting it. Like that Black album came. And this is that for him has been his superstar
Different
album.
For Girls is he really nailed that.
It's just, and he's a great dude and an appreciative dude and a grinder and will do whatever. So Dierks is a guy that would come to mind as just being like, you'll just see him in his truck and he's the same guy out there that he is in the studio. You know, a little scatterbrained, but awesome. If I need anything, he does. You know, Keith Urban. A guy that I have, I think, a better relationship with off the air than I do on. He doesn't come by the show. Like, travels a lot. But we talk and text a lot. Like, and we don't talk about it. But, and then there are people who will help with a lot of the charity stuff just on a drop of a hat. Eric Pasley, who's a great writer and artist.
Yeah, I heard you talking about him this morning.
Yeah. It's almost like, who's your favorite kid? You know, there are about 10 or 12 that are just fantastic. This format, I tell you, working in all the formats, alternative's the worst. Pop is a very close second about artists caring, and because you have to have a certain
right. Like,
in country, everyone, even the ones that don't want to, they have to be nice, or people are way turned off by it.
Yeah, and it comes back from, and I was in radio at the time. You know, us program directors, we were like spoiled brats. So if we didn't get the free show or whatever, you know, you're not going to play their record. And in rock, they just, you know, I programmed rock stations where, you know, this band didn't show up for an interview. And the record label would say, oh, they got busy. And you would just accept it and move on. But in country, we just expect them to, it's a whole different deal. And they have to express that with their fans and the radio stations and the jocks and the programmers. And a lot of them do a great job at it. Most of them do, I think.
I think so, too. And you do get spoiled. But listen, I also realize that if I didn't have this job, probably 4/5 of them probably wouldn't know who I was the next day. So you got to remember that too.
You are your job in Nashville.
Yeah.
The phone will stop ringing in a heartbeat. You know, it'll ring for like the first couple of days when you lose your gig, and then hey.
And that could be any day.
I've been meaning to call you.
Yeah, that could be.
And then when you're back
when
in,
you get
it's
back
like,
in, it's like, how you been?
Yeah. Welcome to Nashville. So here's a question everybody, I'm sure, asks you, but dream interview anybody alive?
I mean, I got to do it. It was Garth the first time. We actually had him in again last week, and that was a lot of fun because Garth's my favorite, and you never get tired of your heroes. But the first time Garth came in, I don't get nervous during interviews because people are – everybody's a person. And so – but Garth was like an angel. This angel walked in with a guitar and played whatever song I wanted, and it was crazy. And I wouldn't listen back to it because I didn't want to hear something stupid that I said, or it was just –
Can you listen to yourself back, or do you have to?
Sometimes.
It's hard sometimes, right?
Nobody likes the sound of their own voice, and I don't like to second-guess things, but there are little technical aspects to radio that I need to improve on, and so when it comes to the tactical side of things, I will listen back. Not for content or how did I do, but there are tactical things to get the most out of ratings that I have to go back and listen to.
How do you reprimand somebody on your crew?
It's weird because it's a friend-boss relationship.
But you have to be their boss, too.
Most of the time.
You're the quarterback. So.
Most of them are good about knowing the difference. Like, all right, so hat switch time. This is what you did wrong.
Do you ever do it right during the show? You can't wait? Or you wait till after?
No, never during the show.
Okay.
I'll cut someone off. Like, I'll turn someone's mic off.
Uh-huh. Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah. Like, that happens even if they're not in trouble. Like, if they're just out of control or Or I'm like, hold on a minute. We'll get you. I turn mics on and off all the time.
And do they ever get upset? I would get upset about that. Hey, Bobby,
no,
just turn my mic off.
It's the culture of it.
Okay.
I mean, my mic should be turned off about half the time.
Do you guys meet after every show?
No, we never meet.
Oh, okay.
We'll meet one-on-one occasionally if we're resetting for something. We're about to get into a big new project. If we're launching a new web series that I just need to clue everybody in on.
Is it better not to talk about the show right afterwards?
I don't think there's a better or worse. I think everybody's style is different. The same way, I don't think my style of not telling the rest of the show what we're going to do is right. I think it's just right for my people.
Right. So it works for your...
Yeah, it's not good or bad. I think with personalities, not radio personalities, just generally, you have to manage personalities differently. And I manage all of them separately, differently, and together.
What do you want listeners to feel from listening to your show?
Just that we're telling the truth. You don't have to like it. You don't have to like me. Sometimes you will. Sometimes I'm a huge idiot or jerk, or I'm the nicest guy ever. But just know that it's just the truth, and it's my truth. It doesn't mean it's the real truth. But like, I'm telling you my truth, and sometimes you're just not going to like it, but just respect, hopefully, that I'm always coming from the place of just being authentic. Because as soon as we lose our authenticity, we're done. Like, we're not a show anymore. We're out.
What's the best compliment a listener can tell you?
I sat in the car for 5 more minutes to finish segment.
That parking lot moment,
yeah.
The driveway moment.
Because everybody, who wants to sit in their car? Nobody wants to sit in their car for 5 more minutes. Like, you get home, you get out of your car, and I sat in the car for 5 more minutes. Yeah.
That's a great thing. And can you tell, there were some, I never had multiple stations when I was a jock, but there were some mornings you'd be on the air and I would think, is anybody listening to this? And then some mornings you would feel like it's click. You could almost feel people, even though you can't see them, you could feel some sort of electricity.
Some mornings I wonder, why are people listening to this? and there are certain... The culture, though, of radio has changed, too, where people don't call as much. Just generally. They can tweet.
It's a different
day.
They
can text. They can write on Instagram. So it's not like someone's going to call and want to really sit on
hold.
In
the other way, they have so much access to you that they didn't have before.
They do, and I love that until they try to stab me. Then it gets a whole different situation.
Because there used to be a mystery where you don't know what the person looked like.
I never knew the dudes looked like I grew up listening to.
Do you guys videotape every show?
Yeah, there's always... There's audio and video and extra and podcasts and content that has nothing to do with what happened on the air, but it's just another arm of the show, always.
And by the way, congratulations. You've been here since 2013. It's like you have a whole record catalog out now. You have how many albums out?
Two.
You just put the Kid Itz album out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The children's album is, just tell everybody for anybody.
We have a band called The Raging Idiots, and so we did a kids record called The Raging Kid Idiots.
Right.
And it's
doing great.
Inspirational and motivational and educational, and that was the goal. But, we put a comedy record out first, and we really weren't going to do it. The comedy record was the number one Billboard comedy record, top five country record.
Right.
So that was weird. We weren't going to do – listen, I can't really sing that well, and I'm the lead singer. I don't know how many bands have, mediocre or less lead singer, but I can write funny.
So when you do shows live in towns, you're selling out all these shows when you go into cities.
Yeah.
Are you doing stand-up comedy? Are you doing the music? Are you doing a combination of everything?
So here, The Raging Idiots started as Eddie and I traveling around with one guitar and playing all for charity until we reached $1 million, then $2 million.
You've done a lot for charity.
But my point was it was never a real thing. It was never going to be a let's go tour and sell. We're playing restaurants and be happy with it. And it turned into this thing where we're going to get a record deal. So we're going to start playing theaters. So it's all music. The Raging Idiots is music. But what I wanted to do was, as we were selling music shows, I opened. I still do. I opened for the band doing stand-up comedy. And I wanted to train myself as the band was growing. And I was only marketing the band.
Mm-hmm.
To be a better stand-up comic. So I would do 20 minutes and 25 minutes. And so now it's time to go out and do a full stand-up tour. And I've been doing stand-up dates by themselves for a while, too.
Have you done any in Nashville? I want to see you do the stand-up act.
Yeah, I did. Well, what was supposed to be where I was working out new material, I did the theater in Franklin, the Franklin Theater. And I really was going to kind of keep it low and just do it. Because you work on new material, some of it doesn't work. because you're out there. It's the worst. Like, stand-up comedy is the worst and the greatest thing. So different than radio. And you're out there on an island, and you're
like
either
you're naked,
sinking,
right?
Or you're swimming, and you're Michael Phelps. It's one of the two. And so I wanted to go work on it. But then everybody, like, people started wanting to come. And so I did two shows back-to-back. One of them I did all the new the stuff that I wanted to work out. And the other one I did, like, my full power routine.
Uh-huh.
And I made sure that the people that wanted to come from the industry saw, like, the good stuff. So I kind of had to position them. You know, I knew the late show, no one wanted, the 9:30 show, everybody probably want to go home. So I saved that one for when I was, so I did two shows that night. But
When did you think about wanting to write a book?
I wanted to write a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought, and I still don't think, I deserve to write a memoir. And so I went to pitch a kid's book. And as I told my life story about why I wanted to write this kid's book, they had said, hey, well, tell us more, and we think you should write an adult book. And I was like, oh, I didn't feel comfortable with it. So I wrote a little bit, and they really wanted me to write the adult book. Actually, it sounds dirty. They wanted me to write the memoir.
Mm-hmm.
The adult book sounds, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was really weird for me, because I never thought at this point I deserved to write that, and I still don't, and I was never going to read it back. Because frankly, it was embarrassing, and so not the things in the book, but the fact that I was like, "Here's, I'm so important. I have a book." I never felt that way.
Did you come up with the title? Is that yours?
I did. Yeah.
I'm not lonely if you're reading this book.
Yeah,
it's a great title.
Self-deprecation is where it's easiest for me. If mm-hmm. I make fun of myself, then it's harder for other people too.
The best disc jockeys, in my opinion, the best talk show hosts are self-deprecating. David Letterman, Howard Stern, you.
Heroes in order, David Letterman and Howard Stern.
I mean, they really can make fun of themselves and pull it off, and you do that too. And I know we're reaching the end here, but I just want to congratulate you. The book's doing fantastic.
Thank you.
On the New York Times bestseller list for 4 weeks, I think, right? And it's just got to feel good. How do you feel right now? What's next for you?
There's, like I said earlier, like, nothing feels good. I just don't want to feel bad. So I have to get back in therapy. I spent a lot of time in therapy, and then I was just busy. I can't do that anymore. I have to learn to enjoy things. So my goal is to start enjoying things more. I hate losing. I don't enjoy winning. I should start enjoying winning a little bit, because it's going to be gone soon. So that's a goal of mine, is to somehow find some joy in some of the good that's happening around me.
How do you turn it off?
I don't know. I don't turn it. It never goes off.
So you told me you're out running hills. You said, talked about that on the air.
Yeah.
Do you turn it off while you're running? Are you listening to music? What do you do when you're running?
I hate it.
You just want it to be over.
Yeah, it's the hour where I'm focused on how much this really sucks. Like, I hate exercising.
So that's not meditational for you.
No, like 5 days a week for an hour, my brain is not on work. It's on how much I hate exercising.
A lot of people probably don't know this. You've done a triathlon, something I just found out this morning.
A couple, yeah. The first one I did not know it was an Olympic triathlon. I thought I was doing the half.
Which is, tell everybody how long
it's a mile.
You start with the swimming first.
You swim first because you want to drown. They put it at the end, you drown because you'd be so tired. So you swim a mile first, and then you bike 26 miles, and you run 6. And so I thought I was doing half that, and I show up, and I just did it to impress a girl. That's all I've been doing my whole life, uh-huh. Trying to get a girlfriend. And so I did it, and I remember finishing, and she beat me. And I was like, man, I have to train harder. And so we both signed up the next year. Then she broke up with me, and then it was just I had to beat the time. And I trained hard.
And did you?
I anger trained. Anger and sadness trained me.
It makes it work hard,
for
though,
2 months. That's what I do on my radio show. Anger and sadness. It makes me work really hard.
And you're going to do another one? Would you do another one?
I would do another one. Yeah. I need lots of different things.
And as somebody who can't swim, I would never be able to do triathlon. What's your favorite event? The running, swimming, biking.
I hate
none of the above.
No, I'm not a big fan. I just like the switch up. That's what I like. The change of them.
Yeah.
That's why I like to do different things. I do the radio show. I have the Raging Idiots. I do the stand-up. I have the book. So for me, it's just about I like different things. I like to try. I like to fail. Because if I'm not failing, then I'm not trying things that make me uncomfortable.
Well, you're not failing. Congratulations on all of your success. Thank you for doing this morning.
Thank you.
And Bobby, congratulations to you again, and good luck to you and everything you've got going. And hopefully we'll talk again.
Thank you very much.
When it's early in the morning and it's time to wake up, didn't sleep long enough, you missed your alarm, and here comes the bus, and you can't find your shoes and don't have a lunch. Be nice, because your mama said so. Be nice, even when she says no. Be nice, when grandma's driving too slow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.